Blog Talk Radio. that I must be dreaming. Can't be real. You're not here with me. See what I can feel you did to me. Yeah. High caress, you let you taste the just so blissful. Listen, I would give you anything, baby. Just make my dream come true. I'll save you. Give me butterflies.
Touch and kiss.
Somebody, someone like you.
Uh-oh, you know what that means. Yep, you guessed it. It's a drip to mic day. The author Hesian got his love going up on a Tuesday like it's a Friday. Two literary prodigies, these scholars be so talented, they can write a novel about water and still entertain a nice tray. No filters tonight, they might say bright day-inducing diatribes that could make a life change. Man, if you ain't gang-gang and don't hang with the author's lounge on Tuesday, you might want to rearrange how you prioritize things. This is family, man. The author's lounge, maintained by overstanding what's understood, so the unnecessary doesn't have to be explained. The pilot and co-pilot flying this plane, entertains by unleashing verbal positive cargo as if it's carried by a train nonstop through your earlobes all the way in until it reaches the creative portion of your brain. Drip the mic is going to the top, high like we just copped a whole pound of the best strain, conducting top interviews and use our platform to help those who choose to network and idea exchange. This is 2 hours of insane vibes. The Archer's Lounge goes live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Central and 7 p.m. Eastern. Guess what? We can be heard worldwide. You know, I sit back like watching Hezzy quarterback like he come with the content and the God is love catches the ball like running it up the side. Drip the Mic presents the Author's Lounge. Stick around so we can drop that sound that up until inception, you and others have been denied. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's hear those hands collide. And please help myself and the Drip the Mic Network welcome the Author's Lounge with your host, the author Hezzy, and co-host, God is Love in the building. Let's get it.
Well, welcome to the Author's Lounge, presented by Drip the Mic Network. Yo, listen, it is 2022, y'all. 2022, can y'all believe it? Man, congratulations and blessings. All the good stuff out to those of us who did make it to see the last of 2021. It very much so like 2020 was a hell of a year. hopefully we're getting better. Yes, y'all guessed it. I am not Hezzy the author or God is Love. No, I am not. In their absence, I'm going to be sitting in right now. I don't know if Hezzy got, and I know a lot of times he gets caught up coming from work. He gets off work kind of late, so I know a lot of times he gets caught in traffic or whatever the case may be. But wherever he is, we do definitely wish him all the best, and hopefully he'll be here soon. If not, y'all stuck with me for the whole night. Who am I? I am Aziz, the Point of Knowledge. I am the CEO of Drip the Mic Network, and I thank each and every last one of you for coming out this evening and spending it with the Drip the Mic Network and the Author's Lounge. So I've been thinking about this new year, 2022. It's a I think we have to manifest and speak into existence our own triumphs and our the things that we want to accomplish. I don't know if this works for everybody, but I know for me, I didn't have a New Year's resolution. Why? Because that causes me to single focus on one specific thing. Others may not have that problem. I'm speaking strictly for myself. So what I like to do instead is set a bunch of small goals in effort to accomplish the bigger goals, the bigger things. I've always been told, and I've always believed, that life is a constant struggle. Don't mean you're constantly struggle. Just mean that there's always that next challenge, that next triumph, that next thing, the next thing you want to do. And if you want to live your life to the fullest, you're going to embrace those struggles. You're going to get comfortable with the uncomfortable, right? And you embrace those struggles, and you use it to project yourself. You use it to kind of platform yourself to that next level that you're trying to reach. And, you know, we always have to reach for better things in life. You know, we're there'll never be a perfect person. That person hasn't been seen, right? However, you can always strive to be better. It kind of reminds me of a poem that I have that talks just about that. But I'm not going to get off into that right now, no poetry, although I would love some. But we are here because of, this is the Author's Lounge. This is not one of the normal Drip the Mic poetry shows. This is the Author's Lounge. Why did I just repeat that? Because we have a very, very exciting author that I've been hearing about from the author Hezzy. He's been real excited about this author. The best I can do to do Hezzy justice and her justice is to allow her to come in and tell us about herself. I'm really interested in knowing her story. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you can please join me in welcoming the author, Miss Caroline Giamanco. Ms. Giamanco, do we have you in the building? There she is.
Yes, I am here.
How are you this evening?
I am doing pretty well. I hope you're doing well, too.
I am doing well. I'm even doing better now that you're here. I do apologize on behalf of the Drip the Mic Network and the Author's Lounge. Hezzy, I'm pretty sure he'll probably be jumping in sometime soon. I do know that he gets in from work late, and a lot of times, especially during his shows. So hopefully he'll be joining us soon. But if not, like I said before, you are stuck with me. I don't know what you did to Hezzy to allow him to leave you stuck with me, but you are stuck with me. So this is what you get. So without further ado, please give the audience a little bit of background on yourself.
Okay. I am a high school English teacher and a prison reform advocate. I've written four published books. My first three are nonfiction, true crime, criminal justice related books. And my fourth book that came out in August, it is actually a collection of paranormal and science fiction short stories that I wrote just for fun, because the first three books were so heavy on my heart. They took so much emotion to write about those situations that I needed to be able to write and have an outlet just for entertainment purposes only. So I wrote Into the Night, which is the most recent book. It's the science fiction and paranormal anthology, and it's 42 different stories that all of them have a twist at the end. So you think you know what's happening, and then you get a surprise.
I love those. I love twists. So question, when you say twist at the end, are we talking Are we talking a twist, like a mutual twist, or is they all have their own separate twists?
Oh, they all have their own separate twists.
Wow. Why am I getting that I'm getting a Hitchcockish, you know, Twilight Zone is type of mysterious feel. Am I in the realm?
You are, and actually, there's a podcast that happens for the anthology as well. It's called Into the Night Anthology Podcast, and it's available on Spotify and all the major platforms. And the voice artist.
Repeat that one more time for the listeners.
Does the podcast
for me,
please.
Repeat that one more. Repeat that one more time.
It's called Into the Night Anthology Podcast. And you can get it on Spotify or any of the major platforms for podcasts. And Nari Kwok, who is the voice artist who does the readings, the presentations of my stories, she was told by somebody the other day that it's like Twilight Zone with better acting. So that's pretty,
wow.
That makes me feel good to be even in the same sentence as Twilight Zone. So.
And, I mean, I'm a huge fan. I mean, I'm such a fan of Twilight Zone. I mean, I can remember all the way down to, like, my favorite one because I was faithful every night, sneaking up late at night. My mom worked late, so I stay up late at night. And my favorite one was the one where I think it was, like, where they went into, like, the fifth dimension. There was, like, a mirror or something that led to the fifth dimension when, like, they could put their hand through it. I think one of them got lost in there. And then, like, the mom and dad would come in the room, and they would hear her, like, Mom, Dad, but they didn't know where she was until they finally found her. And, like, the wall, it was a wall, matter of fact, it wasn't a mirror, it was a wall. And I know they had, like, just a small amount of time to get her out because the dimension and the wall, like, the hole was steadily closing constantly. That was my favorite episode. So if it's anything in that realm, I'm already intrigued.
I think you'd like it. I do. I think you'd enjoy it. I was inspired as a kid. I used to watch Twilight Zone and The Night Gallery and Kolchak, The Night Stalker. I used to love staying up late watching that. My sister and I used to stay up until, you know, 11 o'clock midnight watching those, holding hands with each other, screaming, trying not to wake everybody in the house up.
Right. Man, you're bringing back memories. I remember falling asleep and waking up to the TV being, like, they don't, like, kids don't know today. Like, you remember, the TV would go off. Like all networks would just go off. Like, and you would have nothing but, like,
it'd be snow.
On the TV. Right.
Yeah.
You hear, like, the anthem. The national anthem being played.
Exactly.
Like, you hear the anthem. And then they see, you know, here comes the snow. Like, them was the time. Those were them days back then. So
They were definitely a different time than what we're in these days. Like, kids now don't have any concept of what it was like without cell phones.
Man, listen, like, I was just saying something, like, so I was just talking to somebody about how we have Google Maps and all that now, right? Like, how if I was going to somebody's house, I would be like, well, what's your main street? You know, what's your street? And I get there, and I find it from there. That was the way we found it. What's the big streets over there? What's your two main big streets? They say whatever and whatever. Okay, I know what that is. You get there, and you know that street is on along there somewhere, and you'll find it.
Yeah, when I, you know, look back at, if this was 20 years ago, when I do book signings now, I would be lost if I didn't have my OnStar in my car to tell me how to get to these different places and other states and other cities. And it takes so much of the stress off you to be able to know how to get someplace without looking and wondering if you missed your turn or whatever. Because believe me, OnStar will tell me when I have missed my turn. It lets me know.
Yeah, that's how I am with my Google Maps. It'll let you know. But at least it will reroute you. It will reroute you. See, like I used to deliver furniture about when I was like in my 20s. I used to work for a rent-to-own company. It was like a rent-a-center type place. I used to work there for them delivering furniture. And, Windows wasn't even around yet. We were still just using, just a straight computer, right, to keep our information on. But
right.
When we go out on routes, whether we're picking up furniture or we're delivering, we were using a map book, like a literal atlas. Basically.
Yes.
And every
I remember those days.
Every day I had one. And I wondered to myself, I said, I wonder if I try to use one of those today. I think I'll be completely lost. I think it'll look like the Matrix to me.
Probably. Well, remember when AAA used to be a big thing? If you could belong to AAA, they would map your course to wherever you were traveling?
I thought people was rich that had AAA.
Yeah.
Because it was that high of a level. Like, wait, you got AAA? Man, oh, wow. Okay, yeah, so before we leave, I called AAA. They said we'd be there in 16 hours. This is going to be the best route.
Yes.
Wait a minute, how did you get that information? I do remember that.
If you were really lucky, you had a friend who had a AAA membership who would print off a route for you.
Yes, definitely. So, now going back to those days, though, so do you think that that's what, because from your earlier books to what I'm hearing with your most recent book, it seems like it was a little bit of a switch up for you. And now is the paranormal an interest or something that was instilled to you back in those days during the times that we were just talking about, stand up, watching Twilight Zone and all of the night shows that we weren't supposed to be watching? So do you think that's what actually piqued your interest into that type of writing?
Well, it was, and growing up in my household, my mom, we had kind of a fun family. My mom really was open to new ideas. I mean, she was a very normal, straight-laced person in a lot of ways, but she would want to talk about the possibility of there being UFOs or something like that, or ghosts. And so we would have these conversations growing up about those topics. And so we would watch these kinds of shows for fun, for entertainment. And then also the twists come in, I think, because as a kid growing up, I loved to read stories by O. Henry, and always had a twist at the end. Or when I was in college, I would read stories by authors that are known to have twists at the end, or have something seem like it was a normal day, and then something very abnormal happens in it, like Franz Kafka. His most famous one probably is The Metamorphosis, where the guy wakes up and he's a cockroach, he's a bug. And it had seemed like a normal day for the guy until that happened. And so those kinds of stories just always intrigued me, the idea that it's not always what it looks like it is.
And I love that,
and
too.
And my
go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say my reasoning for doing science fiction and paranormal was because, as I had said, my first three books were nonfiction, true crime, prison-related, criminal justice-related books, that it was nice to finally be able to write about the monster. It was nice to be able to create monsters instead of just tell people about real-life monsters. And before anybody gets the wrong idea, the monsters I talk about in prison, not all of them wear inmate uniforms. Some of them are the guards, the wardens, the major. Those people can be monsters too. And so my first book.
And those are the little twists right there. Those are the little twists that we as readers appreciate, right? I mean, like myself, I'm an avid reader. The people that I've read, you would look at me and you would have no clue that I even, like, had an interest in these people. I'm not talking about, like, the super intelligent. I mean, that's the stuff that came with school. I'm talking about the Judy Blooms and the Janet Ivanoviches. You know, like, people don't even know I love those books, right? And so, the reader, I'm an avid reader, and I know I speak for millions, if not billions, of other avid readers that when I say thank you for those twists, because there's people who read books, but then there's readers, right? And
right.
And me as a reader, halfway through a book, if not a quarter way through the book, I pretty much can say, okay, well, this is going to end like A, B, or C. I may not be able to like nail it down to the exact moment or what's going to exactly happen, but I know where it's going. But when we're reading and then that twist comes in and just takes us all the way somewhere that we wasn't even expecting to go, we appreciate that so much, because now you gave us a whole new story, right? You gave us a whole new storyline to figure out. A good reader, a person who's really into a book, myself, like, I hate when it's ending. Like, sometimes I hate how fast I read. I hate how good a book is because I read it so fast. I'm like, damn, it's ending. But when you slide in those little twists, sneak in those little like tweaks in it, that's a whole new experience for us, besides what we were already had our hearts set on to experience, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And that always makes me so happy when a reader tells me that they had no idea that their jaw hit the floor whenever they got to
right.
the last paragraph or whatever. Like, what? You know, because,
yes.
Oh, it was a nice little story. Then, holy crap, are you serious? That's what it was.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I also always try to incorporate everyday things that people kind of
mm-hmm.
take for granted that are just like,
okay.
Oh, okay, yeah, this product exists or this happens or this is a place and that you don't really think about. But then
mm-hmm.
I kind of put a little bit of a sinister edge to it to where you're like, are you sure that's as benign as what you think it is? Yeah, and
wow.
Like, for example, I'll tell about one story in the book, in
please,
the night. It's called Distant Relatives, and it is about a girl who, her name's Cassandra, and she was adopted as a baby. And her whole life, you know, people have made comments about, oh, well, you don't look a thing like your family, or, well, you know, this, that, or the other thing. And she's never felt like she quite fit in. Like, her adoptive family
okay.
loved her, but she
mm-hmm.
didn't look like them. She had completely different interests than they did. And yet at the same time, like many adoptees, while she was, because my best friend in college was adopted, so I kind of knew about the feelings that they go through because Mary and I had talked many times.
That's beautiful.
Well, on the one hand, she was terribly curious about who she really was, where she really came from, what was her birth family like. She felt incredible guilt about making sure none of that ever got expressed because she didn't want to hurt her adoptive mother. Because it was
mm-hmm.
obvious whenever the
mm-hmm.
topic of her being adopted came up, her mother got very defensive. You know, even if people were saying something like, oh my, you know, have you ever thought about meeting your real family? And then the story, the mom goes, we are her real family, you know, like that. And so
right. mm-hmm.
she had toyed with the idea of doing one of those, I call the company something else, but you know, like those ancestry DNA tests that you
mm-hmm.
can find
mm-hmm.
out
mm-hmm.
if you have relatives.
Right,
and
right,
so
right. Mm-hmm.
She's toyed with this idea and toyed with this idea, but has always, the guilt's always overridden everything else. and so she's always pushed it to the side. Well, this one day she's at the, and she's eating an ice cream cone, and the straw that broke the camel's back is this complete random stranger comes up and says, well, you must have really good genes to be able to eat that and not gain any weight. And she's finally, that was the last comment. She's like, I have to know where I come from because I don't know what my genes are, right? So
right. Mm-hmm.
She orders the kit, sends in her sample to be tested, and she gets a letter back inviting her to go to New York City to take part in the company's advertising campaign. And she's thinking, oh, my high school drama class might pay off now because, you know, I can act in this commercial. And she's thinking about, you know, the catchy tune they use for their commercials. And, well, there was this one family. They looked so happy, reunited. Oh, this could be great, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she gets swept up in it, takes a few days off work, goes up to New York to meet with the president of the company. And his name is Elliot Roseman. And right away, the guy's got a creep factor. And she, when she is led into his office, excuse me,
mm-hmm.
she knows something strange when he pops one of those buttons under his desk and the door locks, you know, kind of a la Matt Lauer.
And, yeah, yeah.
Right? And so, yeah. And so she's talking to him, and she's kind of like, well, when am I going to be doing the ad campaign, this, that, and the other thing? Well, he starts talking to her about how the reason why he got into the business and how come it was so important for him because, you know, our people, you know, for centuries were scattered across the country, and she's kind of like, I don't know what this weirdo's up to. And he's like, come here,
right.
Take a look at this picture, because he's got, you know, really expensive paintings like Monet's and things like that on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But he takes her over to this one that is actually a starscape, and he's like, do you know what that is? And she's like, I really need to be leaving now. And he goes, no,
okay.
And he points at this one star, and he goes, that's home. Well, the gist of the story is that it's an alien race that had come down to Earth, and then because of, you know, like invasions by Germanic tribes and
mm-hmm.
you know, this war and that war and famine and everything, they've been scattered across the globe. And this guy's intention is to recollect his people, to find his relatives. And he's going to use her for a breeding program.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Yeah. So it's like, do you really want to send off your DNA to these companies? You know, is this really what you want to do?
See, if I was thinking about that, see, now something like that, like, hell no. Oh, no. I'm not sending. Oh, hell no. I won't be doing that. No. Wow, that sounds like really intriguing. Like I'm like sitting here all into the story, and this again, this is Into the Night. Where can that book be found?
It's on Amazon, Barnes and Noble. It's available basically anywhere you know. You can order it from any place you can order a book from.
Okay. Wow. So, yeah, well, and I definitely, before the end of the interview, I definitely want to hear that one more time along with where we'll find your other merchandise. Now, getting back to this story, give us something, give us some of the content behind the creation of that, the imagination. Give us something on that.
Well, I try to write about things that people might not give a second thought to that might actually be more sinister than what they appear, or at least maybe completely different than what they appear. And I also try to incorporate experiences that either I have had or that people that I am close to have had, like my college roommate being adopted. And and there is this need to find out where you come from and kind of what would the worst possible scenario of finding out where you came from be? And this was what I came up with.
But you know what, though? See, me, I'm so, like, cynical. Like, my mind works so messed up that I would, like, really, do you know, I would be so hyped if I found out I was an alien. Like, do you know, like, what they would do for, like,
I know, and not only that you were an alien, but now you're being held captive to be part of a breeding program.
Right, exactly. Like, I mean, I know people that have got worse lives. I know people who got a little bit rougher than that. So, I mean, me, myself, I would be like, how cool would that be? Like, wow. I wonder where I'm from. I wonder if I could fly. I wonder if I could change into a living. Like, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
Okay, now, with that being said, how important are, like, because I get, I could be wrong here, but I'm getting that you give messages in these stories. Like there's a bigger point if you can kind of think outside of the box, within the box, so to speak, right? Like, look around
you.
How important are those messages, or is delivering a message to you when you're creating or writing a book?
I think it's really important. I kind of feel like, okay, well, my husband always tells me that I don't do, you know, he's like, Caroline, you don't do anything unless it matters. So I kind of feel like I need to make people think, because that's why it matters, you know, why reading that story matters, instead of just doing it because, well, I didn't have anything else to do on a Tuesday afternoon, so I wrote a sweet little story. I would rather come up with something that makes people think. And so that's why I always try to look for just a little bit different. And, people can get different things. Different people can get different things out of the same story. And so sometimes there's more than one take that people can have on a story.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good too.
Right. Now, so do you have people, do you experience people coming up to you, giving you feedback on the messages that they received, or, they related in a way or something like that? Do you get that? And if so, how often, and what does it do?
I do. Well, it makes me happy to know that I've made them feel something. And it's interesting because both my nonfiction books and my fiction works have evoked those kinds of responses from people. And my first book is, I don't know if you know anything about my background or not, but my first book is about my husband and his high-profile crime spree that happened back in 2007-2008. It made national headlines, and I met him in 2012 when I was teaching at a maximum security prison here in Missouri. The Great Recession had happened. Okay. I'd lost my public school job because we lost population size, so I needed a job. I taught at the prison.
I remember those days. Mm-hmm.
And it was tough, you know, and so it wasn't to work in a prison, but that's where the job was, so that's what I did.
Right. Okay.
So about 8 months after I had started working there, I had to hire a new employee because my old one quit. He went to a different job. So several of us interviewed inmates to be hired, and that's actually how I met my husband. and his name is Keith Giamanco. And he is not the typical inmate. Like, he doesn't even, like, unfortunately, a lot of people, if they've been in prison, maybe they've tatted up their face and their neck and everything, or they've just got a vibe, you can tell they've been in prison. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? There's just kind of that vibe that you get. They've become a prison dude. Keith, you could actually put him in shorts and a shirt or a business suit and have him at, and nobody, even after 13 years of him being in prison now, nobody would ever guess that he'd been in prison. And so he was kind of a fish out of water in prison. And we immediately hit it off, like, kind of almost instant best friends, if that makes sense. And
it makes a lot
so
of sense.
This one day, not too long after he had been working for me, this young guy came up to his desk and he was like, "Hey man, come on, just admit it, you know you are." And Keith was like, "No, go sit down, do your work, I'm not." And he's like, "Yeah man, you know you are, we all know you are." And Keith kept telling the guy, "No, just go sit down." And finally he was like, "If you don't believe me, have your family Google me. But, you know, you need to sit down and do your work." And so I asked him after the kid sat down, I said, "What was that about?" And he goes, "Oh, the guy thinks I'm a chomo." And I'm like,
"Okay.
Why would he think you're a child molester?" And he's like, "Well, I fit the profile." And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "Middle-aged white guy, no previous criminal background." He goes, "Look around. Who are they?" And I looked out in my classroom. I'm like, "Oh, God, he's right." Yeah, that is what – I'm like, "But that's not what you're in here for," because he had told me that he was in for robbing banks. So I already knew it, right? And and so I had known that he was in for robbing banks, and he had told me that he had used notes and not – a weapon, and that he hadn't threatened anybody, because he told me that at the interview, because he said if I was going to be spending 10 hours a day at work with someone, he thought that I should know who they were as a person and what he was in for, right? And
right.
Which I thought was, you know, very noble. And so he had also told the kid, "I'm way too high profile to lie about what I'm in here, so just have your family Google me." And so I was like, "Were you really high profile?" And he goes, he rolled his eyes. He goes, "Well," he said, "I was on the front page of USA Today and on Good Morning America." And all of a sudden, all the little files in my brain clicked together. And I'm like, "Oh, my God, you're the Boonie Hat Bandit." And he said, "Yeah, I am." So,
wow.
So it started off like he's very smart, but he's a terrible speller. And he had a college class. He and my other tutor were taking college business classes. And I would proofread their papers for them. It's kind of like a professional hazard as an English teacher. That's just what you do, you know. And so I told Keith one time, I said, "You know, if you ever write a book or a screenplay or something like that, you might want to have me look over it first before you send it off." And he looked at me and goes, "I will." So then it went, yeah. So then it went from me editing some future book that he wrote to me actually writing the book. And so that was actually the first time I had done any major writing in my life at all, was writing that book. And I had a lot of people — this ties into you asking about people getting in touch with me about things — I have had countless people tell me that before they read my book, they had no idea how the criminal justice system works and how you can get, you know, how one person can get a slap on the wrist and another person, depending on what jurisdiction they lived in, goes off for a long time. Or what actually happens when you go to prison, and about how the good guys aren't always the good guys. And
no,
so
most of the time.
That was my first book.
I mean,
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and I didn't want to cut you off, but just to let you know how not only do we understand, myself, I speak for myself, my listeners, the drift of my family, has not only do I understand, but you're talking to someone who's been in that predicament. You know, up until about 15, 20 years ago, I had no more than a 10th grade education. I didn't even have a 10th grade education because I dropped out in the 10th grade. I definitely did my prison time. everything that you were saying, I was feeling like to my soul, right? Because I know exactly where you're
yep.
coming from. I know exactly when you talk about those people, when you say fish out of water, when you say those things, when you know, like when you're in a position and you know you have a higher calling, but you may have used your gifts in another way. Matter of fact, I'll go one better. Not only did I feel everything you were saying, what you were saying about the notes, the last time I
yeah.
been in prison, my cellmate was he was in there on his. I'm from the Bay Area, California, Oakland, California, and so that's why I did a lot of my time. My cellie was actually a third striker, bank robber, right? And so this was back, you know, third strike law was still active or whatever. So he was actually on his third strike, and we used to sit up at night and talk, and he would tell me about how he never took a weapon, and all he took was a note.
Yep.
All he took was a note in there, and that's all it took. And like your husband, he was extremely intelligent. I mean, like I remember one time I was writing a poem. I've been writing poems forever. Like that's how I got into the poetry thing. Like after I got out of prison, I was blessed to get into a college program through a Second Chance program. Have in California, San Francisco Community College. I was blessed to get into that program. I had been writing poetry already. That's all I ever done. Then I got into, while I was going to college, I was going for paralegal studies. However, I saw Poetry for the People, so I jumped on that. That's when I started learning about Audre Lorde and June Jordan. You know, more poetry really started to hone my craft, and that's what put me where I was today. Again, this was, 15 years ago now at this point. It's been a long time.
Uh-huh.
But it's just funny. It was just so similar, your story that you were telling me, because I'm a product of that, right? Not saying that I am a victim of it. That's a complete difference.
Right.
I didn't allow myself to be a victim of it, but I am a product of that, so I can relate wholeheartedly. And just some of the things just that you were saying just reminded me of how you have to carry yourself, of how certain people are judged on the way they look when they come to the penitentiary when they're new. You look at those things. You make prejudgments, and it's such a small community. A prison is such a small community that a rumor has a lot of credibility, right? So all it takes is one person
it
to say.
It does.
All it takes is that one person to say, "Yo, that looked like that motherfucker that I saw in the newspaper doing A, B, or C." Right? That's all they have to say.
Yeah.
A day. His assumption, although not true, is like the Bible in prison.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what Keith says? He says it's amazing, and it's not just like inmate rumor, but it's – you'll understand this, like what caseworkers and teams, if somebody's in the hole, will go off of. Well, we received an inmate kite. We received an inmate kite that said you were involved in this, and so that's why we're investigating you. Keith is like, what the hell? When we're in court, when we're charged with a crime, and we're in court testifying, the prosecution says, oh, you can't believe anything this man's saying. He's just lying. He'll say anything because he's guilty. But we go to prison, and an anonymous inmate kite is suddenly gospel. That's
right.
Worthy of throwing somebody in the hole for.
Exactly. Exactly.
Or having him set out to be assaulted by somebody.
Exactly. I mean, it's truth. I mean, I'm talking about people will and see. But here's the thing. There's a difference, though. The inmates will. The inmates will believe it and they'll follow it. But the investigation will be done by a convict. Understand what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Inmates will believe it and swear by it, live their life by it. A convict will investigate. You know, and...
Yep.
And the reason I went there was because what your husband displayed was convict behavior, right?
Yeah.
Not inmate behavior. Not inmate behavior. Convicts are people who adjust to the way of life behind those gates. However, they allow themselves, their mind is still free. They're not victims of it. Right, they understand what it takes to survive and what it takes to make it through. However, they know enough to stay away from the bullshit. But when
you're an inmate,
I'm just gonna say it. Another phrase for an inmate is fucking fool. Right, because
I understand exactly what you're saying.
They're trying to, and sometimes it may not be no fault of their own, but they think they have to find a niche. They have to find something to follow. They have to find something to hold on to. They have to find something to believe in. They have to, you know, they have to have something.
They have to belong.
In their mind, they're thinking that they're adjusting, but they're not realizing that the convicts are watching every single move that they make.
Yep.
And inmates coming in playing checkers with chess players. It's not a game there. And
no,
the reason
it is not. And one of the big problems is so many people come in so young. If you're 17, 18, 19, 20 when you come in,
right.
And the system just eats them alive and they don't even have any experience in the adult world in regular society to judge whether a decision's good or bad off of.
Right, right.
Because they're
exactly.
Just kids coming.
Right. Babies.
They are. And unfortunately, they become babies. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep. Wow. Yeah. That you reminded me of so much stuff. Now, so before we continue, though, we do have someone who wants to ask you a question. We do have them on the line. Let me go ahead and bring them on. This is a beautiful, beautiful poet and a writer, also radio host. And she's also my wife. She is the first lady of Drift the Mic, and her name is M&O.
Good evening. How's everyone doing?
Hi.
We are wonderful.
Good to talk with you.
Same here. I've been sitting here listening to this dynamic interview. First, I want to say hats off to my king. You stepped in. You're doing your thing. But I do have a question. And my question is, out of all you've written, what's your baby?
The story about my husband called Banknotes, the true story of the Boonie Hat Bandit, that's my baby because I felt it was so important to get his story out there because Keith did not talk to, he didn't talk to reporters very often. He did the Good Morning America interview. He did one local interview in St. Louis and got burned by it because they made it sound like they twisted everything. And he was like, that's it. I'm not talking to anybody again about this. Someday I'll tell my story, but I'm not going to tell these people. And there were people like Larry King and Geraldo Rivera wanted to interview him. And he was like, no, I'm not talking to any of you guys. And so, yeah, I thought it was important to open people's eyes and let them see what's really happening inside our system. And I grew up the daughter of a deputy sheriff. So I had been around courthouses and sheriff's departments since I was a little kid. But some of the experiences that I happened inside the prison system, like, for example, the very first day I was at the prison before I started working there, I had to do a pre-hire drug screening. And the guy who did my drug test, he told me, we had, talked back and forth just a little bit. And he goes, you know what, you seem like a really nice lady. And a lot of people are going to tell you to be careful of the inmates because they're silver-tongued devils and they're going to try to talk you into doing and saying things that you shouldn't. He said, that's true. Some of them will. He said, not all of them. Some of them will try that. He said, but you have to be just as careful about your coworkers. Because sometimes the only way you can tell the difference between an inmate and an employee is by the color of their uniform. And boy, was he right. And given what happened to Keith in the system and what, because we all think there's no such thing as double jeopardy, there is. You can be convicted twice for the exact same crimes. And that could take 2 hours to talk about, so I won't get into that. And then given experiences that I, as a staff member, had that I saw that was just like, okay, what's happening inside our prisons, that is not right. What we're paying our tax dollars for is not a system that's healthy. It's not producing a good product. If it was a successful system, we wouldn't have a 68% recidivism rate in this country. It's obviously a dismal failure.
I'll tell you a story that sums up something kind of what you're saying, a quick story. I'll make it real quick because I don't need to butt in on your question, Dave. I'm sorry. But just to add credence to what she's saying, just to give you an example. So it's programs, like she was a teacher in the prison system. There's programs that come into the prison system. I told you about this program that I was in. You go, it's like a 90-day program that you go to. Learn different things each 30 days, whatever the case may be. Once you graduate the program, if you complete the program, you get, maybe like a quarter or a third of your time knocked off, right? So we're in the program. The program was held like within like a pod. Like there's a pod and then there's a bunch of cells, right? So it's not like they show in the movie where it's jail and bars and all that. It's completely different than what they really show. You know, there's like a big pod, and there's just a bunch of doors, right? However, where we held our class would be like in the middle of the pod, but it was like a two-level pod, right? So while we're holding our class, they do these shakedowns every few days or whatever they call shakedown, where they just come through and just go through all of our shit, basically just make sure we don't have some extra tissue.
Contraband,
right?
Yeah,
stuff like that, right? And anyway, as they were coming to do it, they slamming the doors while we're taking our class, right? It was a woman that used to come in off the street. She was not part of the prison, was not employed by them, nothing. She was come off the street, and she would run the class, which the class was, either a court order, or you can sign up for it and have the court granted to you. So it was a court ordered class, right? They're slamming doors or whatever the case may be. The teacher says, it's just being ignorant. The deputies are coming through just being ignorant, like slamming them on purpose. Nobody's in there. If there is people in there asleep, they're slamming the doors because they want to wake them up or disturb them, or they just want to come in and show whatever kind of power. People's like, if you can guys, kind of like cool down on slam the doors, we're having class. Dude was like, yo, this is jail. And he kind of gave her a look. Like, as if to say, like, because you're here, like, it's supposed to be a specific way. Like, we're supposed to be treated a specific way. We're supposed to be shown a certain amount of disrespect. We're supposed to be you know, it's about, it's not about the reform. It's not about the getting better or becoming more productive or learning how to become productive. Even if you're trying to do something
exactly.
to learn to be more productive in society, then that's like it's like what I noticed was like there's times I went to the judge with a plan, right? Like okay, this is if you see fit for me to do a lesser amount of time, this is what I plan to do. I've written it out. First of all, I heard about this program, that program. I plan on doing A, B, or C. I do know this place hire felons, so I plan on going there for employment, see if I can get any employment. I went there with a plan, shown them that I had a plan to be successful when I leave. That seemed like it made them more like, no, fuck that. No, you're not about to. No. Because you actually, like you said, it's about succeeding. No, let me give you more time. That's what it seemed like to me. Because the people that went in there and you knew they were coming back. Because, I've seen people come back within the same day. I swear to God, I've seen people come back within the same day. They get out early that morning. By the nighttime, they don't get back on a new charge. Those type of people.
Yep.
Go on. You know what I'm saying? People that look like they were going
wow.
to fuck up again. Oh yeah, they get walked to the door down there. But somebody that comes
that
in there.
That sounds like Missouri because that's the way it is here too.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, I think that part of the problem is because there needs to be a change in expectations for prison employees. Because right now, because you saw this firsthand, right now there are a lot of people who are otherwise decent human beings. Like outside of that scenario, they're decent human beings on the outside, but they have been trained that their job is to dehumanize the inmates,
right.
is to antagonize and harass, because a lot of them start out working at the department when they're young too, just like the inmates start off being young in the prison. And they get groomed by the system to believe that that is being a good employee. That's not being
right,
a good employee.
Right.
That is not helping our communities at all be safer. It's creating bigger monsters and more monsters. It's taking somebody
yes.
who went in for check fraud who now hates anybody wearing a uniform so bad they're going to go out and shoot the first cop they see. That is not helpful.
It's amazing.
And they
how long did you teach
they have
there?
These mentalities. They have the mentality that huh?
I
what?
Said, how long did you teach there? Because it's amazing how much that you've picked up and how receptive that you are to that. Without being like what I'm hearing from you is only things that people that I've done time with or people that have done time know.
Right. Now, 2.5 years, and that was more than enough time to see how it was all working. And
wow.
They, I saw people who were, like I said, otherwise decent human beings, but they thought that that was their position, that that's what they were supposed to be doing. And I saw it right from the get-go when I was in training. Few of the instructors were very business-like but told you to follow the rules, you know, very straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one that taught a lot of our classes, and there were 47 people in my class. And this guy would be teaching the class, and he'd say, well, the rule book says that you do X, Y, and Z, but this is what you really do, wink, wink, you know what I mean? And would tell people to do horribly antagonistic things to inmates. Or,
wow.
or if you really want to get at somebody, stop them on the way to the chow hall, have every single officer ask them for their ID. You know, stuff to
yes.
antagonize people until you can get them to blow up and put them in the hole. Wasn't that fun? And I'm looking around at that class, and everybody was just eating it up, and I thought, this isn't supposed to be the way it works. It's called the Corrections Department. We're supposed to actually be
wow.
going there to set good examples and to help these people get their life back on track. Now, you and I both know that there are some people, there's probably 10 to 15% of the prison population that for whatever reason from the get-go is so far gone, they're probably not fit for being out in society. They're the ones that scare even all the other hard maximum security inmates. They're the ones that need to be in isolation because they're going to kill and eat somebody. You know what I mean? That kind of like there are a few sick people out there that shouldn't, that there's really no chance of integrating them into society.
Reforming them or anything like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I've told people that there's about 40% of the inmate population, 10% of the ones that are just a lost cause. They're just evil people for whatever reason. Then you have 40 to 50% of people who, if they had grown up in a different area, a different zip code, if they'd had different life experiences, they never would have been in prison. I had this one young guy in my class who would talk to me, well, you know when, you know, you're running drugs for your parents, and I'm like, no. And he goes, you know what it's like. And he truly didn't know. Or you know when there's a drive-by, how, well, and I'm like, no. And he, for a while, he really thought that I was pulling his leg, that I was just lying to him. And then he finally realized, wait a minute, you're telling the truth, aren't you? And I'm like, yes, if you had grown up in my little town like my sons did, you wouldn't be here because you would have had other life experiences. You wouldn't have thought that that was normal. And
then that's what
then
point you're making right
the
there.
Rest of the people. go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. And then the rest of the percentage, like the 30 to 40% of the other part of the inmate population, are the ones that scare the hell out of the general public. And the reason for that is because they are just like them. They are one bad decision, one drunk driving accident, one fight in the heat of anger, one desperate robbery, one angry lover's triangle incident away from going to prison themselves. And people like to say that they are the people in prison, that everybody's a monster. If you've gone to prison, you're a monster. You're a horrible human being. And I think a lot of the reason why they do that is because it is too freaking scary to consider that somebody just like that person looking you back in the mirror could end up in that exact same situation. So it's a whole lot better to emotionally distance yourself from the people who are in prison and do the, go ahead, have Bubba rape them kind of thing. Oh, isn't that funny? All the prison jokes that people make because they don't want to consider the fact that that could be them, could be their child, could be their mom, their dad, their neighbor in that prison cell.
That was a powerful, powerful, powerful answer. Did that answer your question, Subliminal?
Yes, but I have another one. I always have two. You know that.
Yes.
Out of everything that you've written, do you have a sequel coming up soon?
Well, I'm compiling more short stories, but not necessarily soon. But Keith and I have a plan. We've had a plan for this ever since writing Banknotes years ago. Just real quickly, let me say that my first book is Banknotes, The True Story of the Boonie Hat Bandit. And then my second book is called Guilty Hearts, and it's actually about the families of the incarcerated, because I'd have people at book signings go, well, you and Keith seem pretty normal, but it's all those other people who love inmates who are like the crazy cat lady. And I'm like, no, actually, there's a lot of really normal people who are in this situation. And so I wanted to write a book about them. And Guilty Hearts, because of the stigma that follows people who love an inmate, that society gives us, how somehow we're treated like we're less than human or we're damaged because we love somebody who's incarcerated. And then my third book is called Inside the Death Fences, and that was actually my story of how I ended up working in the prison, the things that happened to me. Some of them had to do with before I knew Keith, others after him, what I've done since I've left the prison system. And so those books are the ones that I've written, but Keith and I have had planned ever since I was putting banknotes together that when he gets out, we're going to put together a book that's called Off the Chain, because there are some things that happen that have to do with both inmates and employees that it's just not safe for him to talk about while he's still in there for how many more years.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. That exists. Man, you could not have said that. That's probably the most realest shit that you've said so far on the show. you a little bit of Tupac came out of you right there, because that is the truest, truest shit that you could have ever said. And he is exactly right about that. You know, he probably would even go a stretch further and say he's probably said a little bit too much. You know what I mean? So,
people are surprised by how much we have actually talked about, like how much we have actually exposed. And people for years have said, oh, well, are you sure you should say that? Are you sure you should do these interviews? Shouldn't you just stay quiet? Isn't it more dangerous for Keith? Well, Keith probably shouldn't do that interview because he'll do interviews with people too. And I just tell them, no, Keith and I, right from the get-go, have felt that he is actually safer with us being out in the sunlight. If nobody knew that he existed, he'd be in a much more vulnerable position than having thousands of people know that Keith Giamanco exists. Because if something happens to Keith, people are going to go, what the hell happened? Who's accountable for this?
Right, exactly.
To if I just hid in some corner and didn't say anything, and they could do whatever they wanted to, and nobody would know.
Right. Yeah, you have to measurements. You have to take a measurement. You know what I'm saying? Spoon feed it a little bit, you know. And, you know, then once you – but once – I get exactly where he's trying to go. You know, you want to shine light on it. You know, I'm here, I'm right here, but, you know, but then you kind of sit back, you know, and just kind of do a little bit at a time, and not too much to where it can, because right now he's looking at it like he's behind enemy lines, right? And so.
Well, see, here's the thing, though, is that we're actually very open and very blunt about employee issues. But Off the Chain is also going to deal with inmate issues, and there he really can't say anything.
That's exactly what I mean.
We were talking about with you know, the mentalities and the behaviors and the some of the schemes that get run inside prisons and things like that. He's too close to it right now, and there's no protection from inmate to inmate.
There's so much shit. I mean, there's prisons with fight clubs and shit. That's ran by, you know, the authority. There's, you know, prisons with, you know, like whole drug businesses, lucrative drug businesses that's being ran by, you know, authorities. You know, them cell phones and all that shit. They're not getting in there. You know, like if I told you the shit that we had to go through before we finally get to our cell, once you get booked in. If you knew half the shit, the humiliation that you have to go through, so ain't no way in hell we're walking up in there with a joint, a crack rock, a pistol, a cell phone. Nothing is getting up in there that they don't want up in there. Believe that.
We're watching
videos on YouTube and Facebook and Instagram and shit with guys posting videos from prison on their phone.
Yep. I've
you know
seen
what I'm
those
Come on
too.
Now. So, So it's a whole nother level there. I mean, it's so much that goes on, but the public, the average public person is so clueless, and not on purpose. I'm not saying ignorant or, you know, they're just so uneducated about the real deal that goes on that the average person's mind can't even wrap around some of the things
that
Caroline is talking about. They can't even wrap their minds around their reality. Like, they can't even see that. Like, they can't even imagine it. Like that wouldn't even make a good movie to them. You know what I mean? They'd be like, oh, that would be, if that was Hollywood, that shit would suck. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what they would say to themselves, right? They're so far from reality. But the truth of the matter is that she has spoken so much truth today. And as a person, you know, again, I'm so thankful and blessed to have, you know, ran across the people I have that put me in a position to be better, you know, over, you know, the last decade or so. However, coming from that cloth, I just want to tell you that from people like us, we thank you for the thoughtfulness of shining a light and bringing attention to these things. And we thank you for your open mind and your support. But even more important than that, we thank you for the gift that God has put into you to see beyond our situation, no matter what type of situation you have met people like us in. And so I really thank you for taking the time out to sit down and thoughtfully provoke people's thoughts, provoke people's, you know, open up people's mind and give them a way to look outside the box. Because let's talk about
the
elephant in the room.
I am more than happy to. I'm more than happy to do that, because things aren't going to change unless people care. You can tell them facts and statistics all day long, and it's not going to change things. But unless they feel it in their heart, things won't change. And so they need to actually feel these things.
Well, it's refreshing. It's refreshing because, again, as you know, people who come from that, you know what I'm saying, that when, you know, we can say it all we want, and the reason you don't hear it from us a lot is because who's going to fucking believe a criminal? Who's going to believe a felon? Right? You know what I mean? So we're limited.
No, I know. I even get that as, well, you're only saying this because your husband's in prison. Well, how about I'm saying it because it's the God's honest truth? This is actually what's happening.
Right. Well, it's not the only situation you speak to, you know. So, I mean, they can't say that. I mean, and be really optimistic if they're saying that. I think they're saying that closed-minded. Would you be so kind as to, one more time, let the people know where your books can be found and what the titles of them are and how you can be read?
Yes. My books are all on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any place you can order a book, you can get them. My name is Caroline, Caroline, Giammanco, Giammanco. You can look me up on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. That will bring you to all of my books. You can look me up on Facebook. It's Caroline Giammanco, author. On Twitter, I'm at Giammanco Book. So I would be happy to hear from people.
Yes, yes. Y'all heard it, y'all. I mean, this was some real wisdom. This ended up being more of a conversation because it was really just a pleasure talking to you. And what you shared with us today was really a precious, precious gift. And we just thank you one more time for just coming to the Drip the Mic Network and sharing your story on the Author's Lounge. We definitely want to send just blessings on top of blessings out to yourself and your husband. And we hope that we get you back here for Off the Chain. I just love that title. It says so much. It says so much. Then it got sweat for it. That's the whole part about it. So I hope we can get you back here, and
hopefully we can hear from yourself and Keith once we get the release of Off the Chain, because I know that one is going to be off the chain.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And I might have something come out before then, too. So we will keep in touch.
Yes, please do. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to send you. Thank you so much for having me on tonight. Are you on Hezzy's friends list?
Pardon me?
Are you on Hezzy's friends list?
No,
Okay. Well, I'm going to look you up on your on your page, and I'll send you a friend request. I definitely want to stay in touch with you because we are definitely interested in you. Okay?
That sounds wonderful. Thank you. You have a good
Thank
night.
You. Thank you. You do the same. Caroline Diamanco, ladies and gentlemen. Yo, 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 that was very, 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 a very powerful interview. I can't wait to hear more about that. But we are going to keep it moving. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Drip the Mic Network. You are in the middle of the Author's Lounge. Dialing number 646-378-0355 if you have any questions or concerns, or you just want to speak with myself or the guest. Next up, ladies and gentlemen, we have another dynamic author coming to the mic. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Miss D. Bailey in the building.
Greetings. It's good morning here. I'm in the UK.
Oh, wow. It's in morning time where you are.
Yeah, it's 1:30 in the morning.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we thank you. We thank you for definitely staying up and spending the night with us. It's definitely an honor to have you here.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Would you be so kind as to give the listeners a little bit about you?
Okay. So, as I said, I was born in the UK, London in the UK. I'm 56 years of age. My heritage is Caribbean. My parents are from Montserrat in the West Indies, a very tiny island. I'm married.
No, I was just saying, oh, okay. I didn't know what Montserrat was until you just said.
Oh, in Montserrat. If I say Antigua, does that help you? It's a tiny island, not far from Antigua, yeah. Yeah, the population now is probably about 4,500. That's how small it is.
Oh, wow. That is,
yeah. So when they say small island girl, they mean it. they truly mean it. So I have two, I always say boys, not my husband's like, they're not boys anymore. They're kind of like 28, 29. I've got three grandchildren.
Oh, wow.
So I currently now, if I kind of peel it back just a little for you, just to give everybody an idea of sort of like me and where I'm coming from now, and you kind of understand how the books came about. Kind of way back when, like I suppose when my son, my first son was born, and he's like 29 now. You know when you're around sort of like people that are negative? And that moaners and groaners and will moan and gripe about anything and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I was there. I was right in that. And when you're around that surrounding, that's all you find yourself doing yourself. And there was a time when I'm like, hang on a minute. So much as like we all want change, don't we? Everybody wants change, but how many of us are actually prepared to do something to bring about the change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I found I was at. The school were always crying out to school governors, and we were always moaning about the school. And I'm like, you want change, then get involved. And from that time, it's like rather than moaning and pointing the finger at the government, the schools, society, parents, what am I doing? Dee Bailey, what am I doing to bring about change? You can't control everybody else, but you can control what you do.
Wow. 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 I always say that. Like, you know, like I can only be responsible for me. And, you know, it's interesting that you say that about being around negative people, how it can impact your thinking, how it can impact the way you look at things. And, you know, and you, if you, you have to be what you are want in life. And that's basically what it sounds like, you know, prompted your career in writing. It's just that, you know, when you're around that thinking, it's so energy draining, right? It's so energy draining.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I've been there before myself, so I just wanted to, you know, kind of mention, like, I know exactly what you mean on that point. So please go ahead.
Yeah, because what you're breathing in is exactly what you will breathe out. So when you're breathing in that negativity, that is what you are spurting out, you know. So, oh my gosh, that's nearly 30 years ago. And then I just started getting involved with the community. You know, there was events, there was being in the schools and just helping and supporting. So I've been doing that for over 30 years in various shapes and forms. And then kind of bringing it up. In 2014, my father passed away from melanoma cancer. And that was a massive turning point for me in so many different ways. And if I just tell you briefly, this cancer, melanoma cancer, it's a form of skin cancer. For those people thinking melanoma, I've heard of it, but not sure. It's a form of skin cancer. And it actually started on the sole of his foot.
Really?
Yeah. And everyone's like, really? Yeah. And when I initially saw it, it was like, it looked like a mole. It just looked like a big mole. But he'd gone to the doctors, and the doctor said, rub this cream on it. And then it was just growing. And then when they finally... he was sent to hospital, and they said, it's cancer, and what are you talking about? And he needs to get it cut out. And we went to the hospital, and the consultant said, that's malignant. I knew that wasn't good. And he said, those two toes have got to go. Yeah, and it was just, you know, things just happen so fast. So fast, sorry. And,
right.
Over 3 years, you know, he had treatment and everything, but he deteriorated and then he passed away. And I've got four other siblings. I'm the middle child. What does that mean? Some people say that means something, but they call me the barley one. You know, the one cry. My siblings call me the barley one. And through kind of my dad and that journey of him knowing that he was going to die, and he was the bravest out of everybody. And if you sort of like, say if you were to come to the house, he'd ask you, what's wrong with you? Fix your face.
Wow.
Fix your face.
Wow.
So you couldn't be around him and be sad and down. It's like fix your face. Mm-hmm. You don't want that. You move yourself. Move.
Right. Yeah. I love
and definitely. So I normally go to events, and I thought, do you know what? It's time for me to step out and do my own. So that's what I did in 2014, December 2014, and started my own community interest company and organising events such as mental health and wellbeing.
Okay.
Where people could come together and just share. But when I say share, you know when you can share and people are sharing things that they ain't sharing with their family. Because if you create the right environment,
yes,
we should be judging one another.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We should be judging one another, and we tend to do that so much. So much. So I'm going on, and I could be waffling on, and I don't know how long I've got. You want to hear about the books?
No. Well, I mean, but there is, I mean, like you said, there is a story that brought this about. So I'm glad we were able to go on that journey. And, you know, and I think that makes for a better appreciation of the book. So, yes, we definitely want to.
Yeah, most definitely. And so over the years, like International Women's Day events, which I'm sure you have in the UK, in the US. Did you know there's an International Men's Day?
I did not know that.
Bringing something. I don't know if the listeners out there, maybe they know about it, but just like we sort of like International Women's Day, it's a big thing here, and we celebrate, and we want the guys to support us. The guys, you guys have forgotten.
Yeah.
You guys have forgotten. Yeah. So there is an International Men's Day, and I organise that where the men, because they say men don't talk, but do you know what? They do. They want to talk.
Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
Because it's true. But you know, our talking, like we think that, like we have men as a whole, we have a tendency to think what we got to say like has like a lot of weight behind it, you know, a lot of meaning. So we think it's just so necessary. It's when we speak, though, that's what it is. The limit on when we speak.
Oh, I see. So, yeah, over the years I've been, I can't tell you how many. I probably organised probably about 14, 15 International Women's Day, about 7
wow.
International Men's,
wow.
Black Bookcase, Books, Art and Craft Festival, and load of other things that I do. And then March 2020, you know what happened then, don't you? COVID. Lockdown.
Yeah.
So for me, organising events where, you know, people meet up, we network, we chat, and all that sort of stuff, it's like, what am I going to do?
Right.
What am I going to do? I'm so used to, and people, you know, when you just know people look forward and excited by knowing that you're going to meet up and talk and share and all that sort of stuff. And I thought the Zoom, the good old Zoom that came into play. And I literally started April 2020 running a weekly Zoom every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time. Literally every Thursday up until August 2021. That's 15, 16 months. It was every single Thursday, every week.
Wow.
Without fail.
The network, I understand how, you know, the dedication it takes to do a show weekly. But, I mean,
yes.
to not miss Thursday for that long. That's pretty remarkable.
It was so many people said, what a lifeline. I had community organizations and people coming on and sharing, because obviously people couldn't get out. What was going on? What
right.
was happening? How are you feeling? Because you, with this thing now, it's like every week there was something new, something different going on.
Yeah.
We were scared and didn't know what was mm-hmm. happening. So I knew doing the Zooms, you know something special is happening. I didn't know quite
okay.
what it was, but something special was happening, and we were forming
uh-huh.
this really amazing bond. And one of the girls said, do you know what, we need to be documenting this. And literally, if I tell you, 6 weeks later, we gave birth to our very first book.
Wow.
And the book.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So if I if I tell you, I called the Zoom, because it wasn't life in lockdown. It wasn't life in. It was life in a lockdown. 2020, behind closed doors, and that is the name of the first book. Life in a Lockdown. 2020, Inner, INNA, Life in a Lockdown, 2020, behind closed doors. And
Life in a Lockdown,
I'm the lead author. So
okay.
if I tell you there are 22 women who have written a chapter each,
wow.
literally sharing from March, when this all started, when we just didn't know what the hell was going on, March to May, how it was for us.
Wow.
And
you said 20?
It is.
Wow.
It's
wow.
It's amazing. I know
that
I'm
sounds incredible.
Involved, even if I wasn't,
yeah,
I
just
say,
sounds incredible.
This is truly awesome. When you've got, there's people that live on their own, there's people that live with family members, there's somebody who's got cancer.
And where's everybody from? Where's everybody from?
Where's everybody from? They're all from the UK. All of these are from the UK. They're all from the UK. There are 17 of the women are from African Caribbean descent.
Okay.
There's a lady, there's an Italian lady, there's an Irish lady, and there's
wow.
a couple of others. But
I've never heard of
Asian.
Anything like that. I've never heard of anything. I've
really?
Never, ever heard of anything
really?
Like that at all. I've never heard of something that, I mean, it sounds incredible. What's incredible about it is, I mean, you could take your pick. Is it the amount of participation that it takes to coordinate
something like that,
that's incredible that something of that magnitude was able to be organized to be a success within 6 weeks time frame. So the whole thing is kind of blowing my mind. The idea of it, I've never heard of, nor have I ever thought about the follow through, the fact that it did happen. That's amazing. That's amazing. And from what I'm understanding, it's a variety of experiences. Straight from the voices of these people from all different types of living situations. Like you said, some
yep.
people live alone, some people live with people.
And just
sharing their experience.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So when you have, you imagine what it's like to live on your own, going through this
mm-hmm.
awful, unprecedented
wow.
time. So when you have somebody, and actually she's one of my best friends, and I read her chapter, mm-hmm. and she lives with her husband and her son, and she's put, I felt alone. And I'm thinking, but you're not living on your own. How can you be alone? And we assume so many things. So for somebody that lives on their own, you get they're on their own. But somebody who's not living on their own, yet through this time felt they were on their own, it's powerful. It's a powerful read. It really is. And I say to everybody, there's no way you'd pick this book up and not be able to relate to somebody you know.
Wow.
You're going to say, oh, my
wow.
gosh, that was my partner,
so,
or that was my sister,
so
or that was my
all
friend.
Of you, so I know you said you were the lead writer, so but was it you that just said, hey, to hell with it? You know what? Let's put this together. Whose idea was that? Was it yours?
No. One of the ladies who attended the Life in a Lockdown, because the Zooms were called Life in a Lockdown. That's what the Zooms were called. And the lady, Veronica
right.
Ebanks, is a good friend. She's the lady that said, we need to document. Because this is history, right?
Right, exactly. It is.
This whole
history. This whole moment of time. Since March of 2020, we're in historical times everywhere, the whole globe, right?
Exactly.
It's going through a historical, and we're still in it. And the fact that during the heart of it, though, like, because you have to understand, the time that you're talking about is we didn't know shit about COVID. All we knew is that it's, you know, right? You know what I mean? All we know is that we were whirlwind into this situation, to whereas we were like it almost felt like I'm a huge zombie fan. To me, in my mind, a movie is not a movie if zombies ain't in it. That's just me, right? So in my mind, like, to me, it took me to like a Walking Dead type of environment, right?
Because
I was like, what in the world is going on? Is things going to mutate? Is people going to start eating each other? Like, what the hell? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like my mind was just wondering. But for that amount of people to kind of come together and hone in, right, and take this phenomenon in history and bottle it up, and then put it together and share that.
Yeah.
Like, I think that is going to be, like, even if, because I know they have to be, even with the differences in the experiences, right? I think that's going to just really, really going to shine, like, a light on so much of the impact that it has, because you're not hearing it from CNN. You're not hearing it from Fox.
Yeah.
You're not hearing it. You know, this family went through this. This family went through that. No, you're hearing it from the horse's mouth in the most intimate possible way. You know, and I think that is amazing that 22 different stories can be combined like that within a 6-week time frame. So as a reader, I'm so anxious to, like, really, like, just get into the meat of that and see what I'm more interested in. You ever see a video on Facebook or something, and before the video even ends, you go down and you start reading the comments?
Yeah.
You have good. Okay. Yeah. So.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm more interested in people's reaction to that. I'm interested in the book and going through the experience and going on the journey. That goes without saying. But after going through the journey, I have to know what the effect was on other readers, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So as soon as we put that out, we knew there had to be a part two. We knew there was going to be a follow-up.
Wow.
And literally, 18th of January, the second book's going to be coming out.
Wow. Wow.
So the first book was Life in a Lockdown, right? It's Life in a.
Mm-hmm.
And this one.
Now, what time frame does it cover?
Huh?
What time? Okay, so the book one, what time frame does it cover? So does it cover from all the way from March?
It literally covered when it started, March 2020 to
all
May.
The way through.
So it's the first 2 months. We didn't want to because in case there's other people writing books, we wanted ours to be one of the first out, which it was.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very possible this could be a series more than just because, I mean, it sounds like,
people want to know what's happened.
right. Exactly what the follow-up is. And, I mean, there's still shit going on, like, right now, today. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I could easily see this becoming one of those series to where, like, that you just follow, like, and just,
you follow the different characters, you know. And
I could see an easy connection.
Sorry?
So I could see easy connection. I could see readers easily connecting to different people.
Oh, definitely.
Different stories in a book. And I think that's what it has the power to do. And I don't know. I mean, I've never heard of anything like this. So, I mean, I'm amazed because I see it going. I see it being like something that kind of brings people together. You know what I mean? From all walks of life, right? Because
you can't have
that many stories and people not relate, millions of people not relate to something in there, right? There's a situation with that many people. There has to be a situation for everybody, man, woman, dog, cat, you black, white, you know, rich, poor, you know, gay, straight, you know, like there has to be something in there that every walk of life can grasp onto. Republican, Democrat, from the UK, from the US, from Russia, from China, from Mexico, from wherever, right. There has to be some, like, I know that there's something in there. So I definitely applaud you and your group for, sharing your journey with people like us that are interested in knowing how it was for people in Africa, in the UK, in other countries as compared to how things are going here in the U.S., or vice versa.
Definitely. It's a book of, I would say it's a book of hope and inspiration. Because when you sort of like, say for instance, as a reader, and because we're all in different places, you know, we're all in this storm. Mm-hmm. It's a real serious storm that we're in. But do you know what? We're just in different boats, that's all.
You're right. Exactly.
Same storm,
Yeah. And people might get an idea of how to navigate through it. You know what I mean?
This is the thing.
I see you. Do you have this? Have you thought about doing a USA version, right? Networking with some people from the States, or networking with some people from Canada, or networking with some people from, and, you know, have you thought about doing similar projects with other people and getting their points of view into the series, or am I going way ahead?
No, not at all. There's so many different things that are sort of like spinning off from this. It's something that certainly would be a play. That's something that we're looking into. It could be, or even like, as in like a series, a short series where different people obviously play the characters and, you know, just that snapshot in their, do you know what I mean, in their life.
I can 100% see that. I can 100% see that.
Definitely.
I can 100% see that. Wow.
It's so exciting. And you know what? I am, as well as kind of what I'd like to share with you, I am I have my own show. I have my own talk show in the UK.
Okay. Please tell us about that.
That I've been running since May 2018, actually. So it's this year will be 4 years. This will be 4 years. So it's once a month,
wow,
every Tuesday. Stream it live on Facebook.
Okay.
And I have, it's not a specific topic. It's, we have a conversation. There's no interview. No interviews. Because, you know, you just want to know, you just want people to keep it real.
Right.
You know, life isn't perfect. Life doesn't go the way we want it to go sometimes. And, you know, it's all right sharing all the light, fluffy stuff. We see that, and then everyone's striving for that. But that isn't necessarily, as you know, that isn't the realness that goes on. So it's real people, real talk, sharing their real lives.
Well, I would be honored if you would tag me in the next post, if you could send me a friend request. I'm the pulmonologist Robinson on Facebook. If you send me a friend request, or I'll send you one. And I'm definitely interested in listening and seeing the show. And just like you on our show, we definitely would love to come through there. And if nothing else, show support. I think that's something that we definitely ought to do with each other as a whole anyway. I think networking is very important. Supporting each other unconditionally, especially in any networking type of atmosphere, you know, you want it to be unconditional. You know, you want, if you know, like, don't do me any favors and hope for a favor, right? You know what I'm saying?
I do,
you know what I'm saying? If I support something, if I pump something up, I do it out of the kindness of my heart, and I don't expect anything back. It's because I believe in what you're doing, I support what you're doing, and you show me something that shows me that you're worthy of my support and me putting my name behind
you. Thank
you. You know, and I definitely want to support that. So please feel free to go ahead and send us some tags so we know when one of the good juicy shows is coming on, because you said something about keeping it real, and that's something that's near and dear to the heart of Justin Mike. You know, keeping shit real.
Most definitely.
Yeah,
and,
now where's your book right now? Is it on Amazon? I mean, can people in the United States
access your
book?
So the first book, it is on Amazon, and I think we sold over 850 copies so far.
Oh, my.
So
wow.
It's not doing too bad.
That's incredible.
It's not doing too
not
bad.
Not at all. I would say not.
Not too bad. So that literally is life in a INNA lockdown. As soon as you put life in a lockdown, it just comes up, because there isn't a life. See, if I'd have put life in lockdown, you probably would have got several books. There is no life in a lockdown, trust me.
Yes, absolutely. Believe me, I concur. I concur with that wholeheartedly. There's zero, built, none. You know, that's not what you refer to as life.
What I will do, we will, if we can sort of like catch up afterwards, I'll make sure I get a signed copy out to you.
Oh wow, I would definitely love that. Yeah, if you want to hang around after the show, I'll catch you on the back line. We could exchange information, and I would definitely love that so much. And I love the opportunity to come on. We have a series of different shows on the Drift Mic Network, so I would love to come on one of the shows and talk about my experience after reading it. So I would definitely look forward to that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
What
and
else
if
would
I can,
you like for the listeners to know?
It's just how important, sometimes people are not sure why we are here on this earth, and I get that. I truly get that. But when you find your vocation, which is what I believe I've found, and it is about making a difference. And the things that I'm doing with the support of others, and this is really important because some people, it's like, all the things that I do, I cannot do on my own. And I do not do on my own. I have the support of other people within the organization that see the vision that I have, that see that vision. And it's like, right, how can we support? So I give platforms to young people. I'm passionate about the young. And if we do not invest in them, then I don't know what we expect. What's going on now is a product of how we, I feel, as elders. I mean, I don't know how old you are. I'm 56.
I'm an elder. I'm 50, so.
I know the young people, they're looking to us. They don't see us doing. They see us talking. We do a lot of talking, but we don't do the walk. We tell them what we want to see, but we are not showing them the way. We're not showing them the way. So we do a lot of talk. They look at us and just, you know, they're lost. And all of what's going on is them crying out for help. That's how I see it. So I find the work that I do, this is my vocation. We're all here for a reason and a purpose. If you don't believe it, you must know by now, tomorrow is not promised to any of us. Tomorrow is not promised. So do you know what it's like? Right, I want to do what I can whilst I can. You know, my son's now a seen. Look what mum's doing. What she's doing is not for her. It's helping and supporting others. So when you've got young people of like 28, 29 that could be doing certain things and like, right, okay, and wanting to get involved in the kind of things that I do and events and getting their fellow friends of that age, I very much find that what we do, apart from like a wedding, a funeral, and maybe a christening, the young and the old, we don't mix. They do their thing, we do our thing. And the events that I do is for all ages. So that way then, we need to listen to them. We say we're listening, but we're not. We're not listening.
Absolutely.
They're telling us, and we're not listening.
Yeah. And I agree that we definitely need to pay that more attention as a whole. And you are exactly right. And now I see why Hezekiah was so excited about having you on to the show. he said you were really, he was really excited.
We've not even spoken. I'd love to, because obviously this is radio, I'd love to kind of like do something, because everything that I do is like live. I don't do recorded stuff. I don't. And people are like, why don't you do a recorded show?
No, I like everything to be real, authentic.
Exactly.
All of that.
I said, if I fall off the chair, the people need to see it.
The humanization. Yeah, they need to see, like, no, we're not robots, you know.
Exactly.
But we are definitely looking forward to read this book and go on this journey with you, phenomenal women of the world. And so I definitely thank you so much for staying up late and spending your morning, part of your morning.
I'll tell you guys why it's not so hard, because I'm actually working from home. So if I was actually having to get up and go into the office, I would be shattered. Not that I'm not going to be tired, but at least I'm at home. It's not so bad.
Right.
I can roll down the stairs and turn on my laptop.
Nothing like it. Right. In the comfort of your home, man. We thank you so much for bringing your wisdom and your gift here to the Drift Mic Network and the Office Lounge. Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard from Dee Bailey. Thank you. Thank you so much. Around, I'll be with you in just a second, and we will go ahead and get you that information. One moment.
Lovely. Thank you for having me on the show. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Dee Bailey, ladies and gentlemen. Dee Bailey. Man, that was quite an interview. Again, I find that so amazing that those ladies were able to come together and in like such a large number and put such a meaningful project together. So I'm definitely looking forward to learning more about that. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to the Drift and Mike Network, the Authors Lounge. Now, it is Thursday. Normally, the show is on Tuesday at the exact same time with the holiday hoopla and all that mess going on. Dates and everything got switched up. But we will be back to our regular programming next week. Next Thursday will be my poetry show, my open mic show, hosted by myself. And Tuesday, we will have another another show of the Author's Lounge. And I haven't talked to Hezzy, so I don't know who the guests are yet, but we are looking forward to another enlightening week. Ladies and gentlemen, I just wanted to say before I go, love each other. Love. That is the key to making the world go round. I want to thank our guests, Dee Bailey and Miss Monaco, for coming through and sharing their gift with us. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to a Drift the Mic show. You have a good evening.
I don't need no makeup when they wake up. For the ones who rockin' lace fronts, you know, I ain't gon' say nothing. Hashtag me your single, you fresh off the breakup. For the introverts, no, we don't gotta say much. If you feel free, then you should lift your hand. Real love, less friends. So many things in this world I don't understand. I won't judge who you love or your brown. Aim to please, or be a certain way. Don't aspire.